Hi, friends. You've arrived at the space in between. I'm your host, Deneen Sigg. I'm an attorney, a mom, an author, an entrepreneur, and a widow. You are in the right place if you want to learn how we will navigate life's transitional moments, both good and not so good. Together, we will find the magic and bring the light to anything you are dealing with. Come sit with us in the space in between. Hi, friends. Today's episode format is a bit different than normal. Today, I thought I'd have people call in with some questions. We're going to have a captivating lineup of guests, four remarkable individuals who have found themselves right in the midst of the space in between. We'll explore their personal journeys and their challenges along the way. You see, we're all navigating our own spaces in between, you, me, and everyone out there. And by listening to these stories, I hope we can gain a better understanding of our own lives. I'll take some time to answer and discuss each question while sharing my perspective as well. I hope you enjoy this episode. Let's dive in.
Hi, Deneen. I'm Carla Vincent, calling in from Carmel, Indiana. I'm a certified financial planner, professional, and life coach. In keeping with the theme of transitions, I recently moved across the country by car after living in Seattle for 25 years. Rather than drag all my accumulated belongings with me, pay a sum to move them, and then try to fit them into my new life, I decided to take a hard look at each and every item I owned and ask myself three questions. Number one, is this replaceable and what's the cost? Number two, has it served its purpose? And number three, can I let it go? In doing this process with each and every item I owned, I sold or donated the majority of my belongings, including my wardrobe, and freely drove across the country with just a minivan filled with my chosen stuff and my dog. The most priceless thing on my list, my adult son's baby footprints. Another thing I changed, I use my wedding china as everyday plates and I put them in the dishwasher. The process of letting go with both hands allowed me to focus on what's most important to me. I let go of my old job, passed the CFP exam, shifted my perspective, and took another leap of faith launching into life coaching. I'm hoping you might discuss, Deneen, what are you hanging on to that has served its purpose and can be let go to make more room in your life? And what wonderful possibilities might be waiting for you.
So that was Carla from Carmel, Indiana. Thank you, Carla, for that, not only for that question, but all the tips that were contained just within your comment. It seems like it's going to be really helpful. I want to point out a couple of things that you brought up in your call-in. You said that you use three criteria as you were looking through stuff to purge, to move from the West Coast over to Indiana, which is, for most of you, the middle of the country. You ask things like, is this replaceable? That's a really great question. I think that's a great place to start. I would like to think about that in terms of life, because I tend to sometimes collect things. Then you ask the second question of your items as you are moving cross-country. Has it served its purpose? There are so many different things we encounter in life that we can apply that to. Has this friendship served its purpose? Has this pot served its purpose? Has my favorite pair of black jeans served their purpose? And the third thing you brought up that is, I think, key is, can I let it go? So I recently participated in an event that was all about deciding what was in your life that you had to let go in order to up-level to the next part of your life. It was for people that were approaching changes but still stuck or holding on to things. And I love your guidance here, Carla. I also love that you said you took a leap of faith, because I'm sort of a leap of faith girl myself, especially in the last year, sort of questioning whether that was the right thing for me to do or not. And my leap of faith did not result in the best change to my life. So I'm still examining if taking a leap of faith had or was the right way for me to proceed. But I just want to start with, is it replaceable? So in my own life, I find that most material things are replaceable. But if they have some sort of historical significance for my kids, my parents, my grandparents, it's very hard for me to get rid of, even if it's an everyday item. And I wonder if some of my listeners feel the same. So, you know, you have, say, an old magazine. My grandmother used to collect old Life magazines. So I don't truly collect those, but knowing that they were hers and they were in her house and that she really cherished them, it's hard for me to let go of it. But in contemplating a move or a purge, it's not something you really want to pack up and ship because you have so many other things that you literally need for your everyday life. So that's a great question. And I would love to hear from some of the listeners if they have any other suggestions on how you're confronting an item that is in fact replaceable, but has some historical or family significance attached to it. And I'm not talking like a really valuable piece of jewelry that can't be recreated. I'm talking about magazines, but they belong to your grandma, some kitchen appliances or a kitchen spoon that belong to your favorite aunt. These are things that actually are replaceable. How many of those things, though, because of their historical significance, do a lot of us hold on to anyway? And is that energy of those items good for us in the long run? If our whole home is filled with items that belong to everybody else and we're holding on to them because of that, are we really allowing space for new energy? And I think that is truly one of the things we have to think about. When we go to your second stated question, which is, has it served its purpose? I think that might be a little bit easier to answer, especially when it comes to items of clothing or items in your garage that might not be in the best shape, or maybe it was some favorite record albums. You know, people still hold on to them, but you no longer are into that genre of music, or it is no longer something that brings you joy. Same thing with books. Have you read them? Have they served their purpose? Even if you haven't read them and you're no longer interested in reading them, I think that is something that, when I apply that to myself, is sort of an easy answer. Like, I have quite a few items that I've purchased that still have tags on them. They haven't served their purpose, but they are never likely going to be used. And I think that is extremely helpful in the analysis of how to purge and get rid of things so that you can move on. The third thing, I believe, is really the hardest, is, can I let it go? So referring back to, say, the Life magazine from my grandmother, it is replaceable and it has already ostensibly served its purpose, but can I let it go? And that, I think, is the hardest part of this problem solving. I probably could let it go, but do I want to? And that's sort of where I think mentally you either need someone with you to help guide you through letting go of some of those things, someone who has less attachment, emotional attachment to some of your stuff. And also, you need to be truly honest with yourself. Do you need 100 Life magazines spread across 3 boxes in your already crowded storage room simply because your grandmother loved them and they remind you of her? Could you still be reminded of her if you took a picture of them and stored it on your phone? If you took a picture of your favorite one and framed it? If you took your favorite magazine and framed it and then let the rest of them go, maybe to another collector? Those are all ways that you could approach it from that angle. I think when it comes to more intrinsic items or ideas, like, can I let this relationship go? Can I let the idea of this job go? Can I let this person go? Those are really deep questions. And I think what I've sort of advised my daughter and my daughter's friends when this comes up, is that relationship serving you in any way, in any capacity? Is that person building you up in any way, or are they tearing you down? Is that relationship making you feel good when you leave and you go home? Are you reflecting back and feeling like, wow, I'm so glad I spent time with them? Or is it like, that was really not fun and I have this attachment to this person, but you know, it's really clear they don't care about my feelings. Are you being fed by it or are you being denied? And those are all questions that I think we could use when it comes to intrinsic value on relationships, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's a personal relationship, whether it's a friendship. If it's not serving you, then I think the answer has to be, I can let this go. And if you're still struggling with that, then perhaps that's time to see someone, talk to a friend. I know in my own personal life, there are a few ideas I'm still holding on to that I've, you know, attended a workshop on that has helped me sort of move the dial more on letting go as I really take the blinders off and see that this specific issue has really not served me at all and has in fact truly damaged me and damaged my family. And so as you take that into account, I think the idea of can you let this go, the answer has to be yes, unless something monumental were to happen to change some of those answers to those questions. Like all of a sudden, you are feeling good about that person, or all of a sudden there is fruitful conversation and mutual respect. Whatever you're struggling with in the intrinsic department, again, I hope that you ask yourself these questions. And then I just want to finish up, Carla, with your idea of leap of faith. As I mentioned in the beginning of this, I wasn't sure that my leap of faith was the right thing to do. But I think even knowing that, when you weigh the pros and cons, when you weigh the idea that things could turn out horribly, a lot of times I think that's the wrong metric. And I hope that as I move forward in life, I will go back to a thought that has served me since I was probably a little girl, which is, but what if it turns out great? What if it turns out better than I thought? Or how will I ever know unless I truly try? And so all of us at one point is going to have that moment where we face the end of our life. And I believe just from reading things and hearing from other people that have gotten there, that you sort of don't regret the things you tried. You most of the time regret the things you didn't try. And so I hope that to the listeners out there, to Carla and anyone else, that even though I'm questioning my own leap of faith at this moment, my goal is to restore my confidence in taking those leaps, that very soon here, I'll be able to jump off another cliff and just close my eyes and hope for the best, because that's all you can do is take the current situation, take the information you have, and make that decision. And I really do hope that you will take that leap. Thank you, Carla. Thank you for your question.
Hi, my name's Rose. I live in LA. I'm an event planner. I have a question I'd like to ask Deneen. I've had some changes in my life recently where I'm now taking care of my parents, more so for my dad. And this transition in my life, it's sort of my space in between, I guess you could call it. So my question is, do you have any advice on how to navigate this new area? I've gone from being their daughter to now being responsible, making decisions for them, being the caretaker. It's a lot. And I'm struggling with all of it. I'd love to know if you have any advice on the best way to handle this new situation. Thanks.
So hi, Rose from LA. Thank you so much for that question. That is tough. And I do understand that. And you may know that from reading about some of my personal history. I did not go from being a child to a caregiver, but I did go from being a wife and partner. It was way more of a parental role as a caregiver and advocate for my terminally ill husband, who is no longer with us. And the 8.5 to 9 years that his disease progressed were truly some of the darkest moments over a sustained period of time that I've ever endured. And what I found helped me is, first of all, I tried to stay in a wife role in as many ways as I could. So like when there was something a doctor or a nurse could do, I let them do it so that I wasn't completely 1000% bringing down that wall of dignity between my husband and I. I thought that would be important for him, and I thought it was important for me. And I think in a child-parent relationship, it is very similar. And so in some ways, you still want to try to maintain, if you can, and hopefully you have some help, whether it's just respite help or a doctor or nurse that can come by, but you want to maintain that sort of wall wherever possible. And I know for so many caregivers at home, there just isn't the resources and it is impossible, but wherever, however, in whatever way you can, you want to do that. You want to help the person you love, but you still want to try to retain some semblance, even in the smallest way, of the old relationship. So that was one of the things that I tried to sustain over those years. And there were many people who tried to push me into a full-on caregiver, nurse assistant type role. And they wanted me to do everything, every time. And I just always sort of found a way around it. I was lucky enough to have, my husband had family that wanted to step into that role at times. And then unfortunately, my husband ended up in a nursing home for the last 4 years of his life. So there were professionals around that could handle some of the more intimate caregiving details. I was always there as an advocate, and that was tiring enough. I was always there for all the meetings, the hospital meetings. There's an intense pressure on a caregiver to figure out if someone is in a hospital or a rehab facility, to figure out a payment method, whether it's Medicaid or some other way. So that was a lot as well. It's difficult in this country to be a caregiver. There is so little support, but our show is about bringing light to darkness. So I want everybody listening to know I am not discounting your struggle. I am just going to focus on trying to help Rose from LA. Another thing you could do, Rose, is you can turn to agencies that might serve whatever illness, especially your dad, is struggling with. I work with the Alzheimer's Association, and until I started working with them, I was unaware of how many resources are available for all the different dementias that form amyloid plaque on the brain that could be categorized either Alzheimer's adjacent or Alzheimer's. And there is help out there. It isn't enough yet, but it is building and there is help. There are also local services. I'm sure in LA, there's like a Council on Aging where there may be limited respite help available. And that might be something that Rose could look into so that she does get a break. I think for anyone going through this struggle, you've got to have three things. You've got to have faith, you've got to have family, and you've got to have some sort of hope in the future. So if there's something that gets you excited, whether it's going to listening to an orchestra play or going to a baseball game or knitting, whatever your personal thing that excites you is, you've got to seek it out aggressively and put it on your calendar so that even if you're deep in the muck of taking care of someone, you can look ahead and go, oh, next Friday, I'm going to go see, you know, the Dodgers play and I'm so excited about it. Or I'm going to go meet up with a friend and we're going to walk through the botanical gardens, which I love this time of year. Whatever it is that sort of turns your light on for you, you've got to do it. If you're married and you have that support of a partner, maybe there's a movie coming that you both really want to see. And maybe you wouldn't necessarily go to the movies. You would just watch it at home. But because of what you're going through, you know, get yourself out of the house. Go have a nice time at the movies. If it's a question of income, go to a matinee and then go to maybe like a lunch somewhere or pack a lunch. Take a bike ride. I know lately for me, taking a bike ride has made me feel like I'm 12 again. I don't know why. I have a bike in Florida that I keep there and it was amazing, but something about being where I am now and bringing a bike back into my life, it has just been so therapeutic. And that's something that I look forward to, just getting on my bike with no phone and just going. So those are things that you can do to bring hope in. The family part is something that some of us just don't have any control over. I hope, Rose, that you have some family you can turn to. And when I say family, that also means friends that love you, that will take that bike ride or go to that movie or the botanical gardens or whatever sort of floats your boat. And then the faith part is what drove me for almost a decade was there's got to be a way at some point where this turns out for the better for me. It can't be that this is all I was born for, to just get through day after day of this sort of caregiving to small children who then became big children and a spouse that just needed me all the time. There's got to be something out there for me. I was so sure of it. And even when I lost faith sometimes, I was able to sort of reach out and grab even that one little piece back, which is there's something at the end of this journey, this particular journey with my husband that I know is going to be beautiful and it's going to be something worth waiting for. You got to hold on to that. And if you have trouble finding it, refer back to your family and friends and ask them to tell you, hey, how good could this possibly turn out? Even though it's so dark, tell me something that you see ahead for me. I never really asked friends and family for that. I did say to them, this can't be all that I'm made for. And I know that I had friends who would jump in. I had a loving sister and parents, and everybody just felt like this is not the end of you, like something amazing is out there for you. So try to hold on to that or go grab it if you can. And if you can't, if you don't have friends, if you don't have someone to give you that hope, then I really advise maybe trying to visit one of these councils or one of these mental health clinics. Just say, if you get to sit down in front of a professional, could you give me help? Maybe it's a priest if you're Catholic and go to church. Maybe it's a pastor. Maybe it's just a non-secular sort of open spirituality center. Try to find, in whatever way you can, some hope, because I think that's the most important of all these three things. Good luck, Rose. We want to hear about your journey going forward. We're always here, and we'll have the landing page set up soon where you could write in and leave some comments as well. But thank you so much for that question. I know, and I hope that this answer is going to help many of you out there.
Music definitely helped comfort me and bring me peace during my dad's passing. What's your perspective when it comes to music in a space in between?
So that was Remus from Washington, D.C. And he sort of mentioned that, you know, music really helps when you're in a dark time. Losing his dad must have been extremely difficult. And I know personally that music is both a help, but it's also a trigger. I have found, especially my husband, when I knew he was lost to us for sure, I guess at times mentally you tell yourself it's not going to happen or you'll be able to figure a way out of it. But when I knew he was lost to us for sure, there were some songs that I just could not listen to at all. Just 100% still can't listen to them. But there were also some songs that gave me some hope at the time, and I can still listen to them now. Going through a breakup recently, the same thing happened again. There were songs that I just don't want to listen to. I may never listen to again. I actively try to avoid at times. And these were some of these songs I loved before. So I think to the listener that's listening, if music is providing you with a sense of solace and comfort, I love that idea. And I hope that you can just get yourself absorbed into an artist. I know for me, Jason Mraz still sort of works for me, and I can listen and I can get a little bit lost. And I love that. And that was something my husband and I shared together that I, for some reason, never got tarnished for me throughout his illness. Some other artists, as I mentioned before, did, and I just can't. But Jason Mraz helps me. And it used to be Van Morrison for me as well. That was one of the things that when I had a really hard day at work, especially when I was a new attorney in the DC area, at times I would come home, even if it wasn't a hard day, but it was a really stressful, chaotic day, I loved coming home and making myself a drink and putting on Van Morrison and maybe lighting a fire in my fireplace. It was something that really, truly brought peace to my soul. And by the way, if you have a wood-burning fireplace, I think there's something magical about lighting that up yourself and sitting with whatever drink, whether it's hot chocolate or a non-alcoholic beverage or a vodka. To me, there's still some solace in that, and smelling the fire and watching the crackle and maybe even putting the music on in the background. So for anyone listening who is triggered by some music, I say maybe try to find a completely different genre than you've listened to before. See how it affects you, how the notes affect you and the rhythm, and see if you feel yourself relaxing. Some people listen to binaural beats to try to sort of change their mindset. It's not quite music, but there is music out there on YouTube that I think incorporates binaural beats and might be helpful to someone going through a difficult time. I love also when I'm cooking, I love listening to Frank Sinatra. It reminds me of people in my family, even those that are gone, and it has no negative consequences for me, no negative attributes. I just love listening to it. Even if I'm alone in the kitchen, it feels like they're with me. They're standing there. They're helping me, you know, roll pasta or whatever. So, dear listener, if you're someone that does get triggered by music, please try some of these other suggestions that I have so that you can maybe still get that escape that music provides. I really would love to hear that that happened for you. And I want to thank Remus for bringing that up because I think it is so important to view both sides of that. When you're in a dark place, sometimes music can send you further and you just want to avoid that. You want to bring as much light as you can into the situation because that is what dispels darkness in every instance, every time. Thank you so much, Remus, for that question and that suggestion. And thank you for the props on my show. I appreciate you as a listener. Thanks.
Hi, Deneen. This is Laura, and I'm an attorney also. I live in Oklahoma, and I am facing the space in between with my oldest son leaving for college soon. I was wondering how you are dealing with it, because I saw your LinkedIn post where you discussed that you are a empty nester for the first time. Any tips, advice? Would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura, for that question. That is a question that obviously, as you know from reading some of my stuff on LinkedIn, hits home with me. And her question, just to recap, is her oldest son is about to head off to college next year. And knowing that I have become an empty nester for the full time, she was looking for some tips and guidance. And Kelly and I addressed this in a different show. And one of the things that Kelly said that I thought was really helpful was that, what is it you've been putting off that you can now do with that time? Nothing is necessarily going to replace the fact that you once had a full-time kid in the house and now that kid is at college. It's a change. It is quite permanent in a lot of ways, and it is something we all have to come to. But what is something that you can think about that will make you feel good about that? For me, I was really struggling with my youngest before she moved out with some of the chaos in the house. Not the friends. I loved that kind of chaos. Not the parties. It was her inability to sort of keep a lot of the areas in my house clean. And I mean, like, just not super OCD, because I'm not one of those people. And it really started to bother me because I felt like I wasn't proud of my home. I didn't want people stopping by unexpectedly to hang out because I didn't want them to see, especially the lower level of my house. It just had been taken over by her. And the detritus that had collected was stressing me out for the first time in my life. Like, I'm, again, not an OCD, not a super clean freak. I like things clean. I like them sanitary, but I'm okay with a little clutter. It got really bad. So what I started telling myself instead of this loop of, oh my God, now my youngest is leaving, now I'm going to be an empty nester. I started saying, you know what? Once you clean that living room, it's going to stay clean for weeks. Once you pick up the laundry, it's going to stay picked up. It sounds like a really small victory, but I know I've mentioned here before on the show, like small victories are still wins. That is something that has really helped me trying to plan some trips, you know, knowing that I'm not tied to the school schedule, though I have been to her university four times already for various different events and things, and to take her friends to lunch, which has been fun. But trying to plan trips out of Indiana back to the East Coast, coming up to the West Coast, it's been a little bit of a lighter load for me. That's something that I wanted to have more freedom to do. So, Laura, for you, maybe it is time to think about a trip, although I know you still have a younger one at home. Maybe it's time to think about the attention or the energy that would have been devoted mostly to your older son. What can you do that will bring you joy in that time? Is it going with your husband to a movie? Is it just cooking a different type of dinner? Because I know that, for example, with me, when my son is back, I have to cook very differently than when he's at school. And my daughter and I, we actually did sort of have very similar eating habits. So I really haven't changed much, except I just cook so far fewer times because I just don't really care that much. I'm more into a protein shake at this point or picking up a salad. But can you try something new? My son has a severe seafood allergy. So when he's not around, my daughter and I can enjoy shrimp and lobster and things like that. But it doesn't have to be food related. You know, maybe he likes certain sports, and if he's not there, you and your younger son have a chance to maybe watch more of a different sport. Maybe your older is into baseball and your younger one is into tennis. I know that also changed when my oldest left. My daughter and I started watching more like girly type shows because they were things we were into that he just didn't want to watch. When my son comes back, for the two of us, it's all football and baseball. Like that's what we watch and we bond over it and I love it. You still can keep that connection with your older child, but it's really interesting to see if you can try to start bringing in something new with your youngest while he's still there, with your husband, with maybe a friend that's local. Maybe it's easier for you to get out of town because you only have the one child and your husband could now chip in a different way that he couldn't when there were two. Those are all suggestions. Also, again, back to some other questions here, finding something you truly enjoy that might be new, I say go for it. Try it. Again, we'd love to hear from you. Thank you for this question, Laura. And if you're a listener that has additional tips for how to navigate that first kid going off to college, one last thing I want to say is frequent visits if you need them. You know, if you need to go every couple of weeks and say hi, I did that with my son and I no longer have that need anymore. But when I needed to do it, I did it and I don't regret it and I don't think he does either. So don't let the school calendar tell you, okay, you can come on family weekend and see him again in November. If you want to go in October and September, I say go and say hi, take your kid to lunch and leave. And it will really, I think, be extremely helpful. That is one of my personal tips. So thank you for that question, Laura. I really appreciate it. And again, listeners, if you have any other tips that helped you, we'd love to hear about them. Come see us at the Space in Between. Leave a comment. Let us know what you're going through. Maybe there's a show in there. We don't know. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day. Thank you so much for joining me today. Remember that even in your worst days, there is always something beautiful. You just need to look for it. Until next time.